Corn futures. Let's talk about those. We're going to let these folks talk 3 to 5 minutes each about the marketplace, and then we'll take some questions from you and from me. We'll go to, well, it's scheduled to go to the top of the hour. We'll probably go just a little bit longer than that. Paul Cooley is with us from ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Paul's been on the air with us since 1986, Paul? 1986. He and Charlie Lindy and Paul Bates managed to put something together that we currently call the Ag Service at WILL, and Paul Cooley was there from the very beginning. Paul, we appreciate all the work you do. He airs with WILL on Wednesdays on the opening market report and on the closing market report, and is a regular analyst on Commodity Week. Friday afternoon, Mike Zuzolo, Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, joins us. He does that in the morning and Commodity Week as well. And we appreciate all the work that you do. We have two Z's on the air, which is unusual in my opinion. We have Zwicker and Zuzolo on the air, and that's a lot of fun to have people with that last name that begin with Z. Just
did you say you had
an arbitrary. Yes, I did. And Pete Manhart is with us. Pete Manhart with Bates Commodities in Bloomington, Illinois. Paul Bates. Normal. I'm sorry, in Normal, Illinois. Bloomington, Normal. I should just say Normal. Both of them, and I'd be through it. And Pete Ayers, what day are you on, Pete? I don't do the morning program, so I don't often. Is it Tuesday morning you're on? Is that
Tuesday
right?
Morning.
Tuesday morning. Pete's on the air with Dave in the morning on the pre-opening market report on Tuesdays. Clayton Pope is with us on Commodity Week from time to time. And during the noon hour, which is the only time during the day that nobody asks a question, so that Dave and I aren't there, so that noon hour, if Clayton is on, he gets to tell you exactly what he thinks, and nobody gets to tell you, nobody gets to question him whether that is right or wrong. So, gentlemen, we appreciate you being with us. Paul Cooley, we would like to start with you this afternoon to talk about the corn market, please.
Todd, it's always a great pleasure to be here with you and WILL and the tremendous, nice, and wonderful compliments we're getting from the audience on your program on the ethanol panel and the cash grain and, of course, the soybean panel early this morning. Also, it would be only right that I would point my finger on the right side of the room over here, on the north side of the room, one of our ADM corporate booth, and Kathy Hanners from Oakland, Illinois, Cash Grain Merchandisers here representing that team. Wave, Kathy. You can do better than that. Stand up, why don't you? Okay, there you go. Okay, one of the things that I wanted to share is, of course, these are my views and not necessarily ADM or ADM Investor Services views. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the world economy. The U.S. economy is the only large industrial economy in the world that's really showing much growth. And every morning when I wake up, I realize, how exciting this business of commodity trading really is. When I first got started in the business in 1972, we had this tremendous grain robbery of Soviet grain buying that just shook the commodity markets all over the world. And now we have something a little different called energy economics and agriculture and corn to ethanol and sugar to ethanol, and talk about bringing a new type of era into the marketplace. And I'm always concerned when I hear people like T-Bone Pickens and Goldman Sachs talk about $100 a barrel energy, and when people say how bad we're subsidizing corn, ethanol, and things like that, it always scares me. I also am very excited about this new thing in South America where they're turning sugar into ethanol, and the tremendous economic impact that it's doing in the Caribbean Basin and Mexico and Brazil, where 1 acre of sugar cane equals about 4 acres of corn sugar, corn energy, and the tremendous impact it's having on corn sweeteners and, of course, the corn ethanol business. One also has to watch this year weather, and, of course, it's extremely dry in the Western Corn Belt and the Western Wheat Country, and that's also having an impact on our commodity markets. The commodity funds are just unbelievable new aspects of commodity trading. And we always have to not only watch fundamentals, but we are also watching technicals. as well as these commodity funds and the dynamics that they're bringing. I want to just touch a little bit more on just one little area. And, of course, the thing that we have to watch here is of course, being good traders, but we also have to focus on being focused on our business. And, of course, the ethanol panel not only brought this out in a great deal of economic sense, that successful people are focused and they do have visions about how to deal with these new changes in our economy. And as you can tell, I'm really bullish on agriculture and agribusiness, and hopefully it will be a successful year for all of us here today.
Thank you very much, Paul. Paul Cooley, of course, with ADM Investor Services. Mike Zuzulo with Risk Management Commodities. Good morning. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon. Ditto on what Paul said on the way you guys are doing this, and Jay, and all the way on down to everybody. Thank you for everything you do for agriculture. I'm excited. This is one of the funnest days of the year for us, and I brought Chuck Shelby. He's back there with our group and our booth. I'm so excited I brought him because he has to hold me back. So I got a joke. I'm a bad joke teller, but I got to have a joke after lunch because everybody tends to fall asleep. Okay, so two farmers and a market analyst go deer hunting. It's slug season, so they take their guns. Do you know where this is going? The first farmer, he sees a beautiful buck, and he says, I'm going after that one. So he takes a shot, and he's about 4 feet over the top of the back. The second farmer goes, well, you're terrible, you're terrible. He goes, I'm going to take a shot at it. He shoots, and he's about 40 yards short. It hits the dirt at about 40 yards in front of the deer. The market analyst, he throws his gun down, jumps up and down. We got him! We got him! That's how marketing is nowadays, isn't it? Like Paul, I kind of want to take a step back. We're in a historic time, and this being an annual meeting, we want to kind of throw something out to you, maybe help you in the big picture stuff. Back in World War II, the United States went to a fixed exchange rate to help rebuild Europe and Asia, and both economically and literally from the ground up. And so all the other countries in the world that really mattered, they went and pegged themselves to the U.S. dollar. And the U.S. dollar was pegged to gold. And that's where the saying, as good as gold, comes from, is the U.S. dollar was pegged to the U.S. gold, or pegged to the gold. Around 1974, just 30 years ago, we moved back away from gold, took the dollar off the peg of the gold, and other countries had to move their peg, or slowly move their peg, away from the U.S. dollar. Why am I bringing this up? Well, because our mindset would be we're reaping that reward right now in this market right we're in right now. Technology and the currencies being opened up are benefiting and breaking down barriers to the point where from 1979 to 2001, the world trade of goods is up 400%. The world trade of currencies is up 1,700%. We're trading $2 trillion a day in currencies. So globalization's really come into fashion, and that's because of these currencies. Well, what does that mean to you and I in this room? Well, number one, this is why the funds are buying right now. This is why the Deutsche Bank CEO, the Deutsche Bank fund CEO, says, we think one of the big benefits of owning commodities is it allows investors to participate in the rate of global growth and consumption of commodities associated with that growth. And they're in it for the long haul, they say. The second thing is, if you go to the internet and you look up the Ag Forum that the USDA just had in Washington, D.C., there was three or four seminar presentations of people in the know, economists talking about the U.S. dollar and how our U.S. dollar is so important to the market now. Remember about 30 years ago, before the exchange rates changed, a lot of people were taught, and rightfully so, that because we're in fixed exchange rates and the market didn't really move that much in currencies, that bulk commodities like corn and beans really didn't do a lot of changing in terms of demand when prices moved and currencies changed. Well, that's changed now, and we're in a new, different time period, we think. Number three, protection in the U.S. Protectionism is rearing its head. We can see that with the Port of Dubai information and news that we've been getting recently. And so it's important to realize where we are historically. So our bottom line is the dollar and interest rates are even more important in today's analysis when it comes to corn and bean and wheat marketing analysis than it ever has been. So please keep that in mind when you do your homework at night, that we are truly in a different economic time, and I would almost submit to you a historic time when it comes to exchange rates, because we just went off the gold standard just 30 years ago.
Thanks, Mike. We appreciate it. Pete Manhart is with Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois.
That's always great to be here. Some of the things we heard this morning that I either want to repeat or scratch my head about. Nobody said anything about soybean rust this morning. Maybe that's the thing that'll get it up a dollar or two. Budgets and Congress, have they ever known what reality was? Ag funds and subsidies in the farm bill, I wonder when they will print what big oil subsidies amount to. Maybe we ought to check for that, because they get more subsidies than we do. The weather's always there, and we never know what it is. We have the largest carryout in corn that we've had since the 80s, and we're at 260. Isn't that wonderful? We have the largest carryout in beans ever, both in the U.S. and in the world, and we're over $6 in new crop on the board. Isn't that wonderful? I think we're in an exciting time. Our guys that we listen to up in the ADM Investors and David Hightower tell us that we've got 10 to 20 years of wonderful commodity opportunities in pricing, and I think we'll talk about that more here in the corn in a little bit. But I just think it's a good time for us as being in the ag business and being in something raw commodities that now people really feel like that, hey, corn is now an energy product. It's not a feed. And sugary example tripled in price in the last year. Well, corn is one of the last ones to be changed into ethanol, but these index funds are buying corn to hold it for several years, so it becomes an energy market. And we'll talk more about that later.
Thanks, Pete. Clayton Pope, what are your observations today?
Okay. I guess I want to go back to something Mike brought up, because I think this whole currency issue is very important this year. Like Mike said, 30 years ago, we went off the gold standard. Nixon shut the door because really De Gaulle was threatening to come and take all our paper currencies and basically wipe out Fort Knox and take the gold home with him. At the time, a lot of you would remember, Paul mentioned the great grain robbery. It wasn't just the supply and demand and the Russian buying, I don't think, that really caused such an eruption back then. If you look back, I mean, all the other markets exploded as well. You know, the coffee, sugar, and cocoa, all the exotics, and all the grains. I think what you saw then was sort of a realignment of nominal values of commodities as they relate to the currency. And I think that's part of the reason that we've seen this strength of late that's sort of been inexplicable in a lot of people's minds. And silver is, of course, leading the way over $10 now. I think that there is a growing distrust of paper currencies, no small part due to our administration and our Federal Reserve's policies of monetizing debt and printing so much money and constant deficit spending and trade imbalances and so forth. So I think all this volatility and sort of this new mindset of the world global currency market, it is fantastic. It presents a lot of opportunity, I think, because wherever there's increased volatility, there's certainly opportunity. And so I guess I'd say that given the fundamentals as we know them right now, I think corn and beans are just a sell with a capital S. But in my mind, you have this other added risk right now, and that is, you know, just what the heck's going on in this currency market right now. And I guess there's always a reason to talk yourself out of taking a marketing action, but I think that's a very valid one this time. So matter of fact, March 20th to the 26th, Iran is opening a new world market, a bourse or exchange for their oil, where they're no longer going to denominate it in dollars. And I think this is a very significant move. And if the rest of the world follows that lead, and I'm talking in extremes here, but and it probably wouldn't cause a big disruption, but if it did, it could be a very big disruption, because if you start to undermine the confidence in the dollar, then I think, you know, who knows what prices would do. So that kind of possibility, I think, is holding me in check in marketing. But like I said, I think it does present an awful lot of opportunity. I was driving home last night down Prospect in Champaign, and I saw a little marquee in front of a church like so many of them have now. And it said, I thought it was kind of strange for a church to say this, but it said, a risk-free life isn't worth living. And I thought, That's kind of dangerous to tempt a would-be sinner, I guess, with a sentence like that. I took it as a green light myself. But it made me think, I think a risk-free farming operation isn't worth farming, because where there's risk, that's where their potential lies. And I think we should all keep that in mind, and it makes it all the more critical to learn how to use the tools that we're all up here trying to push and trying to further everybody's knowledge and how to use the options markets and the futures and the various cash instruments and so forth. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, let's see. We've covered ethanol, the dollar, big oil subsidies, silver, coffee, sugar, cocoa, soybeans. Oh, we did get to corn at one point during that discussion, didn't we? All right, let's get to corn. Let's talk a little bit more about corn and where this market is at the moment, how it got there, and where it might be by the time we get to the fall harvest of 2006. Paul Cooley, tell me about the fundamental supply side of the market at this time.
Okay, super. You know, one of the things that we go back to last fall, and it was touched upon, and we're going to steal a little thunder from the cash grain panel when they talked, that, you know, talk about a monumental deal with this last year's harvest. The corn yield came in a lot better than anybody dreamed it would come in. We knew it was a pretty good corn crop during the summertime, even with the dry weather. And the Hurricane Katrina just messed the transportation system up a great deal. And as a result, we did find a home for it. And it was basically philosophized that we would come in with a smaller corn acreage because of the high fertilizer costs. And the debate here is somewhere in the neighborhood of 1 to 1.5 million acres, and some people are even saying 2 million acres of smaller corn production. As we go into the meeting season, it's brought out to us that two things, with the crop insurance program, with the willingness to graze corn and gross the most dollars and freedom to farm, farmers, I think, will plant less corn, but they still like to plant corn. And so we don't really think the acreage drop is going to be any more than 1 million acres plus a couple of 100,000 acres. And the other one that I'd like to talk about, too, is this carryover idea. And the carryover is being reduced next year based a lot on ethanol, about 400,000 to 500,000 more bushels of corn usage there. And the other one that I want to bring in here is, of course, this China package where they're basically withdrawing out of the export market. So not only are we seeing a industrial demand that's tremendous, we're also seeing export demand that's very interesting. And we're also seeing this tremendous carryover that we thought wouldn't go under 2 billion bushels, all of a sudden getting smaller, Todd. And that's where some of the dynamics is, and we'll go and let the other panel steal some of the thunder.
All right. Well, given what he's laid out as a potential supply side, where do you think, Mike, that the price of corn might go from now until harvest season,
given
normal growing conditions?
I think that's a good caveat. We went back, and on March 6th of every year, the last 6 years, these corn was only up in September 1 versus today's date, 1 out of the last 7 years. So given a normal crop, I think we're going lower. We don't suspect very much LDP in corn because we've seen South Africa, Brazil, Argentine, and Chinese corn exports go down the last 2 years pretty dramatically in the first three. So we think we'll pick up more market share globally, and that'll help support the price, even with a big crop. We feel like the ethanol and the livestock utilization is going to be at a pretty high pace this year in 06, early 07. So we suspect it'll go lower. We're looking at $2 as a DEES futures price as we go into harvest, given a normal crop.
You know, the economist will look back at last year and say the LDP was awfully large, the countercyclical payment was in place. Is there any way that you can see that these producers will make as much on this year's corn crop, Pete, as they did last year's corn crop?
Grow 250 bushel and get a 60-cent LDP. No, that's facetious, but But no, last year's LDP, I don't expect to see it that large. But, hey, lo and behold, if we grow a very good crop of corn and our exports aren't quite as good because China does keep exporting corn, who knows where it'll be this fall. But, you know, last year the low was 195. I think the year before it was about 187. I think we're projected this year to maybe be 205. Corn only spends 15% of its time above 260, 15% of its time below $2. We've been above that 260, so we ought to be doing something. But, you know, projections, what are the acres going to be? What's the weather going to be? That's a big part of it.
Lay out a marketing plan you think works.
Well, I think it's interesting to note that part of the reason where we are is the funds from being short.
Go ahead.
Did you say?
No, he's just waving it.
No, I'm just asking him if they have a question. I was talking to the audience while you were talking.
All right.
Sorry.
Okay. All right. Anyway, the funds have bought about a billion bushels from being short to being as long as they were a few days ago. I mean, these guys are long like 180,000 contracts, which, you know, something like 800 million bushels. It's really kind of mind-boggling. But I think in the process, what you've seen happen is you look at the supply-demand, and of course, we don't have the official one yet for the 2006 crop, although we have the rough estimates came out of the baseline projections and so forth that these guys referred to. And so we got about a 1.8 billion bushel estimate. I'd say the market's trading right now. But I think what you've seen happen as this market's advanced is you have so many analysts like ourselves and others that they start saying, well, what if? You know, they're trying to explain the strength. Well, you know, what if the trend line yield isn't achieved, which is just under 148 bushels? You know, what if ethanol doesn't increase by 400 or 500, but it's up 700 or 800? You know, all these kind of things. Well, I think it's important when you look at these prices and how good they are relative to what the carryovers are currently, you know, from a historical perspective, it's important to look and think, well, what if we go from our yield, a trend line yield of like 148, if we just go halfway up to what the yield was in 2004, which was 160, halfway up, you've got a carryover equal to what it is right now, over 2.4 billion bushels. So when you look at it in that perspective, I mean, these are good prices, I think, and so with the caveat that I kind of mentioned in my introduction, and admittedly it's a little extreme, and I think you got to take that into account, because I don't think it's likely, but I think those currency disruptions are a possibility. I think that these prices should be protected.
Marketing plan, you need one. Put it on a piece of paper. What's your average yield? Where am I going to start selling? Where am I going to be to by planting time? Where am I going to be when a weather scare occurs? We'd like to be 25% sold now. On our table back here, we got a few of these of just what he talked about. If we would grow 10% less than the trend line, we would have next to the lowest carryout we've had in 20 years, which would be huge prices. If we grow 10% over trend line, we'll have a bigger carryout by 400 million. We'll be at 2.8 billion. So that isn't very much above or below trend line. Weather has a lot to do with it. Acres have a lot to do with it. Have a plan in place. Protect what you're not selling. Buy 260 puts. Buy 250 puts. Sell some high calls against it. But have some kind of a plan. Sell cash if things you want to replace it and be ready for something later. You can buy calls to still be long. But have some kind of a plan. A mixture of cash sales, buying puts, replacing stuff sold with calls, et cetera, to have a plan of where you're going to market this crop. With the dry weather we have out there right now, nobody really knows whether we're going to get nice moisture like last year to have a record crop or to feel like we did last July when you would have taken 120 bushel. So plan for a normal crop. If it's abnormal, you can use all kinds of paper to help you do whatever you need to do.
Speaking of weather here, that's where I come in. But just a quick question. Two growing seasons ago, we had virtually no heat, and generally wetter than normal conditions had record crop for corn. Last season, we had some of the driest conditions, especially across Illinois, since 1988, and some periodic heat. Yet, national corn was the second largest crop on record. Why? What are your thoughts on why the big yields last year, despite the stressful weather, quote unquote?
I,
I guess I can tell you what we think Chicago is thinking, and that may be just as important as anything right now. We had our Chicago friends down at our seminar in August, and we asked that exact same question to them from where they sit at the Board of Trade, and they said, you know, we learned a few years back, meaning 20, 30 years ago, you have to have a drought in the three I's, Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa, and we only had it in one of those states last year, and so we're not going to buy into a drought unless we have it in the three I states. And I think what we have picked up in the last 6 or 7 months has been the mindset in Chicago is there's genetics out there nowadays that if you don't get rain, instead of the plant dying, it actually shuts itself down until the next rain. Whether that's true or not, whether the artificial intelligence is that good or not, really does that matter? Probably not when it comes to marketing. It's the perception in Chicago from the way we see it.
Good springs to get it planted. We had great stands. Everything came up. It sat around dry. I know guys that planted and didn't have rain for 8 to 12 to 13 weeks. Then got rains and it came on and had 160 plus. Genetics is part of it. But it's got to come up well in the spring. You have a good dry spring and it all comes up. That helps tremendously. And then adequate rain whenever needed later. But genetics are a lot of it. If we would have had these genetics in 88, we wouldn't have seen what we did in 88.
I don't think we had any denitrification of the corn plant. In other words, we didn't have major flooding in the early part of the spring. We didn't lose a lot of the nitrogen. And when it did start to rain, help fill the grain, and we did have a lot of sunlight without the rainfall. So when it did rain, it was a bingo, and things worked pretty well.
I'd just like to add, I think that two factors maybe would explain the difference would be, first of all, and particularly as Chicago sees it, like Mike mentioned, they were timely rains. I mean, it was just kind of a life-saving rain just in the nick of time. But maybe even more importantly, it seems like talking to my farm customers is that the subsoil moisture at the beginning of the season was so much better than it is now. And that's why there seems to be so much more concern right now because, you know, what if we have such a long dry spell this summer like we did last year and we're going into it kind of handicapped a little bit already, it would almost undoubtedly be, you know, more damaging to the yield.
I have a what-if scenario. Probably looking ahead a couple more years for the 07 Farm Bill. If we do see some changes in that Farm Bill and then there's no more LDP in, say, 2 to 3 more years, are we going to see an improvement on the price side, like on the cash side when it comes to new crop corn? I don't know if we'd be looking for 07 or 08, but do you really think that there's going to be an improvement in the cash price?
I'd say that'd be a pretty dramatic change. Personally, I'm not looking for an elimination of the LDP. It seems like most of the budget tightening moves we've heard, you know, referenced would be, you know, some kind of X percent and not that much, you know, 10 or 15% or something. To just eliminate it, it's at this point anyway, sure doesn't seem like Washington is really that budget conscious. Now, I realize there's a lot of pressure for them to become more so, especially in an election year, but I just don't think that Washington would move so dramatically so quickly.
I think that far out, and again, we're probably looking at the 2008 year for the 2007 Farm Bill, but what's our ethanol usage by then? How much have we increased it? And what's the weather? Have we had this drought and took our supply down? I mean, the U.S. has most of the extra supply of the world, and where's China at? China and Asia are two big factors that we haven't said much about today, China and Japan, and, you know, what they do might have more to do with it than our LDP program.
I have a series of questions for you out here. How many have old crop corn left to sell? On your fertilizer, how many of you dropped your nitrogen rates last fall because of price, but you used the new U of I stuff to justify that? Anybody drop nitrogen rates last fall? Okay, how many expect to leave them the same this year? And the rest of you are not putting nitrogen on at all?
did that study here the other day say we'd been putting on too much and we need to put on less? Is that what it actually said?
Yeah, it depends on how. It depends on where you live. If you live in southern Illinois and southern Indiana, you're gonna put on what you've been putting on.
What do you call southern Illinois? Below Chicago?
South of Effingham.
Okay.
If you live south of I-70, you're going to put on what you've been putting on, but you're probably going to be able to meet all of your requirements for your nutrient management plans. that means they're going to be up a lot. But the rest of the state, and this goes across the Midwest because most of this isn't. Purdue's doing it, Iowa's doing it, Illinois is doing it. I think Wisconsin and Minnesota are all in on the same sort of new nitrogen matrix, and the rest of the states will all, if you ask them, they'll say, well, it looks the same everywhere. It doesn't matter. This is hard to believe, too, that it doesn't matter about your land. It doesn't matter what the drainage looks like. Corn plant just requires a certain amount of nitrogen, and that's what it takes. So they're going to divide, for instance, in Illinois into northern, southern, and central. And there is a little variation in what they'll be putting, what they'll be advising you to put on, but not very much. And the only reason they're dividing it up is because they didn't figure the guys in northern Illinois would believe that they need the same amount of nitrogen as the guys in southern Illinois.
But it doesn't make
too much difference. Okay, we got a question where? Yes. Why do we say south of I-70? That's what Emerson Nafziger says all the time.
Well, I grew up north.
Well, there has to be a dividing line somewhere. Everybody says, I think it's because that's where, if you're on this side, isn't that where we change land?
The moraine stops. South of
right
Route
about
16.
Charleston. Yeah. So we use I-70 roughly. But that's geographically, there's a way to divide it up there, and that's roughly the reason. Okay. We know you have good soils down there. I'm sorry. I'm going to get myself in trouble back on campus. Okay, so let's talk about new crop corn sales. Where should we be at, Paul Cooley?
You know, Todd, 30 days ago, we all have a nice rear-view mirror in our pickup truck, and we all can see backwards better than we can look forwards. And one of the things that 30 days ago, I'd say $2.60 board futures was one whale of a sale. And now all of a sudden, you know, when we saw corn go up past 265, we really don't know whether that's such a good sale after all. When we have private weather people that say, yes, it could rain in Kansas, and the La Nina isn't quite as strong as we thought for. So my opinion is that when we look at this Friday's supply-demand, we're going to see a cut down or a smaller USDA carryover. And what I honestly think is that we will see some higher prices this summer as far as corn is to put that major percentage and lift that major percentage of sales and put that on your books. Believe it or not, I'm getting more questions about how to protect prices on the upside than I am getting questions about protecting corn on the downside. And one of the things that I'm basically using on that question, and then we'll get back to your other question here, is that we're basically going in the money, buying December corn futures at 260 and writing a 260 call against it. Basically, you're protecting yourself 26 cents or so on the upside, and also the market can go down 26 cents before you really lose any money on the particular trade. The reason why I like that is that you're already short at your elevator at $2.60, and this is really you don't waste a lot of money on options and things like that. And I think that even though I'm not going to pick on Mike here, but he's forecasting a $2 corn price this fall, that's a very low corn price, and we're still saying at $2.20 area, and there's a lot of things we can do to get out of it if we start to see those June, July rains. So that's in case we are bullish on the upside. As far as being bearish here, gee whiz, $2.60 is an unbelievable price here. Believe it or not, trend is still higher as far as our moving averages are concerned. And any selling of corn is just a position trading and locking in profits, which isn't too bad a deal if we look at past history. But we're all scared to death of the weather, and we're also scared to death of these new things called the commodity funds that just absolutely terrorize a commodity trader.
Mike Zuzalo, same question for you.
We'd be 40% right now. We would do that in a hedge-to-arrive or cash-type sale. We did buy calls earlier in the year back in the holiday time period, Todd, If you went with our recommendation, we'd be at 40%. If you didn't take our recommendation on the calls earlier, let's talk individually. The last thing we want to do is oversell our cash bushels before planting. So we don't want and recommend anybody being over 40% cash sold of expected production. If you could generalize this market right now, we feel like wheat's the leader to the upside, meal and beans are the leader to the downside, and you've got two wild cards out there in the next 45 days, the Chinese currencies and the acreage. So how do you put that in your marketing plan? Well, our vote is be heavy on bean sales using bought puts, no short calls right now, and be lighter on corn sales, because if we are wrong and beans go higher, we would think that the wheat and the corn would be leaning the beans higher at this point.
Can you I'm going to stop you for just a second, because I got this question earlier, and I'm trying to think about how this would work. I know how it would work, but I'm not sure what July 2007 wheat prices might be. Would it
July
pay?
2007, 425.
425. Four and a quarter. So could you put four and a quarter ground, sell that? And would you advise selling that and putting four and locking that in and putting wheat in the ground this fall?
Yes, to 20% of your crop.
Anybody willing to do that? On to a few.
We've noticed that as farmers get busier and labor's harder to find, wheat is becoming a friend to the farmer that's really busy in the summertime. So we've seen a big acreage increase, not just because of the prices, but also because it works on the farm a lot better.
Okay, Pete, your numbers.
Corn-wise, 25, 30% sold. I would be looking at protecting as we go up, selling more as we go up. So we had some at 50, 55, 60, 65. I would expect to sell some more at 70, maybe 75. I think you will run out of price all but in the last 30 years. You'll run out of price 27 out of 30 years. The 3 years were, 83, 88, and maybe that 90, whatever. But you're going to run out of price before you run out of crop. So price it as it goes up. We'd be 25 to 30% sold now. Again, people are afraid of what was mentioned earlier, of the dry weather, of the acres, and of these new index funds that buy and hold instead of the regular funds that buy and sell. But we would be looking also at then protecting as we go up what we don't have physically sold with puts. Again, $2.50 down to $2, that's 50 cents. If you take that 50 cents times 170 bushel, that's $85 an acre. You need to protect that some way. Buying puts helps do that. Look at buying some 260 puts or 250 puts to protect what you don't have sold.
And Clayton?
I would be 25% cash sold on my new crop corn, estimated production. I have a hard time going beyond being 25% sold if I haven't even planted it yet. But I would by all means protect another 25 to 35% using a combination of futures and options. And exactly how you construct that really depends on the client in terms of their propensity for risk and how willing they would be to come out with a small loss and that kind of thing. But I certainly think that would take you up to 50 to 60% protected, and I think that's where I'd want to be. And as far as old crop, I have a hard time justifying holding anything at this point, especially when you see the action the last couple of days.
Clayton Pope is with Clayton Pope Commodities, Pete Manhart with Bates Commodities, Mike Zuzula with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, and Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services. Please give them a round of applause.